Welcome to episode 3 of the Soul Rift podcast. For this episode, I sat down for a chat with Bernd Lehan of EgoSoft, the makers of the X games. Beginning with X Beyond the Frontier, released in 1999, the X games allow the player to pilot spaceships in an open-ended, sandbox-style game with plot missions, contracts, trading, construction, and conquest. The most recent release in the series is X3 Albion Prelude, an expansion for X3 Terran Conflict, and the storyline Bridge, unifying the current series of X games with the upcoming X Rebirth, due sometime in 2012. Albion Prelude is currently available on Steam as part of the X3 Terran War Pack, or, for players new to X, you can get the X Superbox with every X game ever made. I'd like to welcome my guest to the Soul Rift podcast. Could you briefly introduce yourself for our listeners?
Well, my name is Bernd Lehan. I'm managing director of EgoSoft. That sounds so much business right now, but originally this also meant that I was a programmer in the early days and really designed and developed the earlier games of the X series, which started in 1999 when the first game was released, X Beyond the Frontier. At that time, I really was still a programmer. And nowadays, it's more game design, if anything, unfortunately, because the company grew and the series grew. So, but I'm still very, very keen on at least being up to date on the design side of things with the game and pretty much involved in planning it all, where the series is going in the future. Yeah, that is basically all that EgoSoft is about. We are really exclusively working on these space games because it's been pretty successful for us. It's maybe some bigger companies consider it a niche market, but for us, this is our only territory and more than big enough for us. So we want to really make space games better and bigger in the future, and that's what EgoSoft is all about.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed EgoSoft's games because, like you mentioned there, it doesn't seem like there's a very big market for space games, but there's a lot of fans like myself who really do like space games a lot, who grew up on games in the 80s like the X-Wing game or the Wing Commander, and there's not that much other than X out there for fans of space games.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, I've had lots of discussions about why space games are a niche or are considered a niche nowadays, and I'm sure there's no real inherent reason for that other than, first of all, of course, it's simply ignored by the bigger business and also some game design things that just went wrong in the early 90s, probably already not so much in the because. Yeah, when first-person shooters became more popular, it's kind of like the downfall of space games began. And I can explain that a little bit because that's part of the reasoning behind our plans for X Rebirth, because we really want with X Rebirth to redesign how a space game works. That's certainly not so easy, hence the long development cycle of that game. But I'm... In the end, it amounts to the fact that I'm really sure that it could be a mainstream market again if it's done right.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hope so. I have my own theory about space games and their popularity or lack thereof. I know when a lot of the space games came out, there was a heavy emphasis on using a joystick to play the game. Again, with the first-person shooters, there was a very heavy switch towards using a mouse instead of a joystick. And I think there was maybe a difficult transition period between games sort of still using the joystick while more users didn't have a joystick to play the game. Do you think that might be an issue?
I don't think so, really, because Freelancer was... did it pretty well early on. I must admit, for our game series, it certainly was a problem. We could have certainly done some things better because we also had these transition problems. Well, there were many problems when you transition a game from one episode to the next episode over 10 years and you are building and building on top of it. But
yeah.
The input was also one of those things because it was originally designed much more to be controlled with a joystick. And then later we added more flexibility, more configuration options, and the mouse cursor only was introduced with X3 and really only made use of really well with Terran Conflict. So this is something that we also took us quite a long time. But I think Freelancer is a good example that was already there pretty early and did it also very well. And I think it has much more to do with the environment itself and the nature of the fights. If you know the X Games, you know they are not just about fights, for sure. I mean, the whole economy and that management and building is certainly a big part of it. But still, fighting is important. And the thing is that the environment is very different. If you look at a first-person shooter, what the actions is all about is learning and memorizing the levels. And in space, if you are really in space, if you are in empty space, that whole aspect of gaming is missing. And if once you played first person shooters for a while, it's relatively boring to play in space in empty space, because if you have a dogfight in empty space and you have ships passing by, there are no walls, there's nothing to learn other than the pure tactics of one ship against another. Yes, certainly you can spice that up with interesting weapon systems, with configuration options of your ship, and with primary, secondary weapon systems and all of that. And that is great, and that has to be done as well. But in the end, you will still lack the density of the environment. And that's why with X Rebirth, we are doing all we can to really get fights also down into complex station geometries where we can. And basically have much more, more complex environments to play with. I mean, that still can be a space game, but I think mostly this is a technical problem, because the main difference technically is always that you have a floor in a first-person shooter, and that makes AI and navigation a lot easier. While if you are in space with a 3D environment, having AI navigate through complete 3D is much harder to do well. If you want to have your AI agents, your NPCs, fly realistically and good inside a complex space station, that's just something that I don't think anybody has done well.
It's a big challenge.
yes, exactly. And once you overcome that and you make it possible again, then I'm sure you can have just as much fun or more, because, in the end, of course, a game has to be fun in the first place, and then you can add a lot on top of it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the floor, as it were, to sort of orient players in a game. When you think of, for example, the original Star Wars movie, the epic space battle near the Death Star at the end. Well, in a sense, the Death Star, and especially the trench scene, acted as a floor to orient the viewers to sort of make that space combat a lot more exciting. And then when you go ahead to some of the further Star Wars movies, they often oriented their space combat next to some large object. Like, they were all flying very close to a Star Destroyer so that all the ships would sort of orient with something in the horizon. And you often don't have that in a very free-form world like the X universe.
That's exactly one of the things we try to do with X Rebirth. The first step towards that is that if you do fight near a very big object, that you have to gradually become part of its environment. That you have to, for example, when you come closer to a capital ship, that the capital ship moves you with it, kind of. And that is, as long as you don't have that, the capital ship just has to rotate a little bit and you bounce along.
You go splat.
Yeah, and that's of course something that destroys all gameplay near a capital ship already. And that's something that we've done very well in NX Rebirth already. So that's one of the features that's already working, and that's really fun and makes it so much more interesting to deal with large objects, because it now makes sense to look at individual turrets and go and investigate large ships or stations. But what I meant with the floor problem is mostly the AI. Even if you have that Battlestar floor, the problem is the NPCs, the other ships, the Darth Vader that is behind you, he still has the ability to fly up and leave the environment. And that makes it so much more complicated when you come down and there is the antenna. I mean, of course, you can script these things like it was done in Star Wars games. But if you really want to have AI that is able to navigate completely free in a 3D environment, that's really hard. Of course, it's not hard in a totally empty environment, but as long as you are near a space station that has lots of trenches and interesting surface elements, then it becomes complicated.
So why don't you talk a little bit about the X Games, because you said that you've been working on them, I guess, since the very, very beginning. For our listeners who, if they've unfortunately never had the privilege of playing an X game and they're still wondering what it's all about, can you talk a little bit about the development history, the kind of game you were trying mm-hmm. to make, and how successful you think you were in making the original X games and how they've changed over the years?
Yeah, sure. Well, it started with a game called X Beyond the Frontier. The development of that is even early in the 90s, but the release finally was in 1999. While the whole series based on that, and even though we have replaced the 3D engine and many other components over the years, what defines the game series has remained true from one game to the next, and that is a universe really to play with. We think of the games as really providing the players a universe, and they can decide what to do inside of that. So the main tagline behind that whole thing is the freedom to do what you want. And we always try to also give players a plot to follow and an interesting storyline. But the main feature is still the freedom. So a plot in an X game would never have an end. It would have a climax and maybe even a cool cutscene, but that cutscene will not end the game. You can always continue playing, and there's always something more to do, and people define their own goals long after the plot ended. To a degree, we were surprised by that ourselves after the first games were released, seeing how extreme people were playing them. This was people really sent us save games with thousands of hours of game time in them and doing things that we never thought possible ourselves. But that is the outcome of providing a free universe that develops in every direction possible. And that is probably the second important factor, the simulated economy. Even for players that are not so much interested in a trading aspect and building and this kind of stuff, the game is still more interesting, I believe, simply because this part is simulated. You know, even if you are if you play an X game just for the fighting and following the storyline, it makes a difference if you know that this ship that you are destroying really was transporting goods, and simply because you destroyed it and picked up its crates, cargo crates, now there is another station that doesn't get those crates, and the prices for these goods may be going up, and that may have consequences. And when you fight an epic battle, and you can foresee the consequences that may have on the economy, and vice versa, the economy may have consequences on the fights. So it just makes things more believable, and that is also something that is really at the heart of the whole game series, what it's all about, in my opinion. In addition to that, it's really growing from game to game. Then we started off with X Beyond the Frontier with this relatively simple game where you just flew one ship, and the possibilities were, when you compare it now with the latest release, Albion Prelude, so much more limited. But over the years, we added possibilities. What can you do in a free-form universe? You could build stations. You could own many ships. You can actually switch and go to all those ships. You can control them by commanding. You can have your own empire of a whole fleet and even fight epic battles, or you can even destroy entire races in the end. That's what I meant with setting your own goals after the plot ends. Some people try that. Some people set really, really high goals and continue playing for thousands of hours. And because the universe is simulated in a way that it doesn't really limit you there, people find crazy things to do that we didn't really plan for.
Try to wipe out all the space stations in the entire galaxy.
Yeah, or at least one race, you know. I mean, sometimes there's this political side to it, or we have these different alien races and they have relations to each other that you can use to your own advantage. Sometimes if the one species hates the other, you can shoot ships down for them in their territory and get rewards for that. And then if you start later trading in a bigger way by building your own space stations and letting the trade go more and more automatic, you can use those relations in your favor by becoming a supplier for one war side, for example. Or, well, it's up to the player. I mean, some really prefer the economic side and want to stay outside of battles and just use their economic power to make their space stations more secure and safe, and always go into areas in our universe where there's lesser chance that they are ever going to be attacked, while others are seeing it more as a war game where they are looking for the attacks and the chances to find pirates, for example, or one of the evil guys in our games called the Xenon. So they go closer to the territories where they are. And it's, as I say, it's always about the freedom to choose yourself. We don't tell the player exactly what he has to do.
Now, I noticed that although there's a lot of freedom in the game, there's a sort of a limited amount of randomization. Like when you start playing the game, the map is basically always the same, and yes, where certain stations are is fairly fixed.
At the beginning, that's a point. It starts always the same, but it doesn't go the same. And you can make big differences, and the universe can develop in very different ways. I mean, randomization, I don't like even just the sound of it. I mean, that just sounds chaotic, because if you would just have randomization for the sake of it, it would take freedom away from us as game designers, because we want to make the game interesting. And if you would just, of course, it would be from an implementation side very easy to just randomize the universe and throw dice by deciding where to place space stations. But then we would lose the freedom to make the scenario more interesting. But then seeing the development and planning only in a limited way where that development will take us. The more into the future of the game you look, the more blurry it gets. There are always some developments that we can foresee. But as I said, people play the game longer than we ever could test it. If people play this game for thousands of hours, there's a high chance that we've never seen it running that long, even in the best case testing. That's something that we cannot do. So that's really the beauty of it. And also getting later feedback from the community, which is very important for us, seeing what they do with this game is so much fun for us.
But have you ever thought of perhaps even adding as an option the opportunity to randomize the universe so that players who have played through it, you know, a few times can get that feeling of exploration again? Once you've explored the galaxy and you start a new game, it can feel like, oh, well, I'm just going to go to the same places again, as opposed to starting a new game and thinking, wow, this is going to be a whole new exploration experience. I don't know where I'm going to start and where I'm going to go.
Yeah, that's already in, and but we didn't want to randomize the whole universe. First of all, it really takes a long time until you know the whole X universe. I mean, in the X games so far, so everything, including Albion Prelude, the number of sectors is pretty big, and sectors can sometimes also be very big. But in addition to that,
I certainly haven't explored them all yet.
and that's it takes really long time until you have seen everything, and then when you have seen everything, a lot has changed already. I mean, it really takes weeks until you have seen everything, and you can be pretty sure after weeks, the stuff that you have seen at the beginning has already changed again. So that is one part of it. But the other side is, since Terran Conflict, we've added one feature, so-called unfocused jump drive, that allows you to jump outside of the normal X universe into areas which are basically, well, random. And that's exactly what you want. It's a little bit like an arena mode. You find enemies, and you find sometimes interesting things, but these are indeed random sectors. And but they are, yeah, they are a little bit outside of the normal universe. I mean, literally they are, because by the fiction, they do not have jump gates, and you cannot go there by gate. You can only go there with your unfocused jump drive. And so that's but if you're really into this kind of scenario, it's also in there.
Because it's hard to get in game.
yeah, it is. It was part of one of the plots to get it. Terran Conflict has a couple of very hard plot lines to play. It had one main storyline, but it had some additional stories, and each of them had a really big reward. Like there was this unfocused jump drive, and another thing was the so-called hub, which was, I think, the hardest of all of our plots. You had to really be extremely advanced player. So I guess only a very small fraction of players ever got that. But that, for example, was a huge station with multiple jump gates in it and the ability to refocus them. So you could actually create shortcuts inside the universe. You have to know that the gates in our universe are, the fiction behind it is that they were not created by the inhabitants of the universe, but by an ancient race. So they always were there, and from the point of view of the races that now live in the X universe, they've always been there, and they have no way to influence them. But the player gains this ancient technology in that very special storyline.
That's interesting. Well, I know with Albion Prelude, there's pretty major changes going on with the storyline. I think there's two main storylines in Prelude, right? Like, you can play as the Argon or the Terrans, sort of in a new war that's coming on between them.
Yes, that's correct. There's actually, it's not entirely new. That's the same war. Well, it's now a war, and it was a conflict before. That's the reason why the game before that was called Terran Conflict, was that there was already that conflict on the horizon, that kind of like a different opinions about some important matters between brothers, as we say, because there is this X-universe side of the human people, which are the Argons, which also come from Earth, but a long time ago. And then there is the real Earth now, which was the main new feature in Terran Conflict, because before you could never get back to Earth. That was always an important goal from earlier on. Yeah, but anyway, this conflict is mainly about the use of artificial intelligence, because the whole story of that universe started with the development of artificial intelligence. There were people on Earth started building something called terraforming robots in the very early on in the fiction, and those at some point went out of control and turned against their creators. And so out of that developed basically the whole back, that's basically the whole back fiction of X Beyond the Frontier already. What this led to later is really a big fear of AI on Earth. People on Earth are very, very deeply afraid of using of AI because they burned their fingers really badly once. So this is the cultural main difference between the humans in the X universe and the humans on Earth. And in Terran Conflict, this already was hinted at, that there is a conflict developing there between those two sides. And now in Albion Prelude, this is really turned into a full-scale war. And that's one of the main things, the main fiction backgrounds of this new game, but it's not the only one. The other thing that we want to achieve with this game is really explain the changes that are happening towards X Rebirth. And for X Rebirth, as I said before, we want to do a lot of things new and better with space games in general, and that also meant that we had to do a lot of big changes to the universe. So Albion Prelude tries to explain some of those things. It's, for example, also a lot about the creation of the first highways in this.
Yes, I remember I just got to the point in Albion Prelude where I got to the Albion sector and I got to see them starting to build the highways. Mm-hmm. So what are the highways supposed to be? Because in Prelude, you can't really interact with them, right?
No, in Prelude, you just see them being built, and you hear about the fictional background that once they will be finished, they will allow a much larger economy in space. Because at the moment, or with all the X games so far, the economy was always explained as partially planetary, partially in space. Therefore, what we saw in space was always relatively limited. That is simply also because of the traveling in space was too energy intensive, too energy consuming. And now with the ability to build those highways and moving therefore very in a controlled fashion, very fast, this will lead to much larger sectors, if you will. It's not just the universe will no longer just be about the space between two jump gates, but it can actually extend into much bigger dimensions. And that's what X Rebirth will be all about. The universe will be more interesting because you can travel much faster and you will travel along those highways, always from interesting spots to interesting spots. And yet the universe has still this hugeness at the side. So you can you basically have a system similar to roads on Earth, where you can travel relatively quick when you use the highway, but you can also stop and go off at any point and explore the emptiness of space, if you like that.
Reminds me a lot of Freelancer, where they had a similar sort of network through each sector of these acceleration gates.
Yeah, highways were certainly not super innovative. The idea of having some transportation system like that in space has been done before. The thing is, it's done differently, but yeah, the idea is the same. One big difference is the fact that you can leave them at any point. Another big difference is the fact that you can interact with other ships inside the highway. So flying inside the highway is not just another way of jumping from location to location. Actually, on the contrary, it should be fun and it should be interesting. You see the universe next to you, you can interact with it, and you see other ships that are traveling on those lanes as well. You also have to think of this as a way of increasing the density of or the chances of experiencing meetings with other ships. I mean, one of the big problems with a game, with the X Games so far, is that it is really hard for us to make sure that you ever meet other people. Think of even those relatively small sectors in realistic terms, they are small. If you look at a typical X3 sector is maybe 50 to 100 kilometers. That means that is the distance from one gate to the other. Maybe there are three or four gates, and then this is basically the two or three dimensional cubus or the square field between that. And of course, you can extend that. You can always go beyond those gates, but it's still very small in relation to real space dimensions. Yeah. And yet, if we place stations and ships inside that cubus, you have a really big chance of never seeing anybody. We need thousands of ships to fill such a cube because it's so huge still, right? That is changed dramatically as soon as you have those highways, because things develop along a structure. And if we have, like we had in Terran Conflict, a couple of thousand other ships moving along highways mainly now, then you suddenly have much higher chances of meeting them. Suddenly it's a really crowded place. And that's still, on the one hand, you want that. You want the chance to meet people. You want the chance to, and the experience of what you see in science fiction movies, Fifth Element or something, where you have really these dense atmospheres. And at the same time, space is always about size. You know, you want it to be big. You want it to be realistic in these dimensions.
Now, does that mean that there's some good opportunities for players to engage in being a space pirate by sort of disrupting the highway and interrupting ships that go through and trying to steal their cargo?
Everything. It's not just intercepting highways. Highways are like roads. Everything can play on them or next to them. And yes, you build stations near highways, and you build you can intercept. You can scan other ships. You can find out what they do. It's just you have much better chances of finding people near highways than you have chances to find people in empty space. It's it's that simple.
Very interesting. Now, another systems thing that I noticed with the Albion Prelude right away when I started playing as the Argon, the first storyline, basically the first option, was that they were saying, oh, there's a big war going on with the Terrans. They sort of declared open conflict. And when you looked on the map, the systems were highlighted in red. They sort of said, you know, here's where the fighting is with the Terrans. Does that mean that with the Albion Prelude, there's actually ways of shifting control of space? Can the players go into those sectors of conflict and switch which controls or owns that sector of space?
Yes. Well, it's first of all, the war is limited to a certain area of our universe. We do not want the war to completely go out of control and take over the entire universe. Yet it does go in certain planned ways. There are certain stages in the war have certain likely outcomes, but the player can influence them. So yes, there will be always inside war sectors, there will always basically be a back and forth, and the two factions fighting each other will sometimes the one side wins and the front line kind of moves, and next couple of hours later it goes back. This is really the main new feature of this game, that we have these changes on that scale. I mean, we always had battles that could go very dynamic, but we never had that scale that included many sectors and developments where a whole battle reached over multiple sectors at the same time. And that's really a main new feature.
Now, I know one of the other exciting things about the X Games in general is just a sort of a strong support for users who create their own mods, who add their own content to the X Games. For example, there is one mod that I tried with X3 Terran Conflict that tried to add the ability to have this sort of these wars that span many systems and let ownership of sectors change hands. Mm-hmm. How does EgoSoft as a company sort of approach modding? I mean, is there always been this idea of really strongly supporting the mod community, or is it just sort of something that kind of happens out there? They do their own thing.
No, it's definitely something we want to do and always wanted to do. This is I don't know other companies' policies on that or the reasons for not supporting it, but I think it would be very silly to not support it. We definitely benefit from good mods for our game, and we will always support it. And that we indeed try to do this better with the latest game by making it easier to manage multiple mods and making the installation of mods easier. We also always bring out something a little bit similar, like an SDK, little tools that help modders reverse engineering the different file structures and how our 3D files work and this kind of stuff. So this is all. We have something called the DevNet on our website that already exists since the X Beyond the Frontier days. What you can do there has changed a lot over the years, but the attitude is always the same. It was an attempt to support people developing content for the game. And this is not the first time that we have also used content from some of the best mods in a game then. The war scenario is not a good example for that because, yeah, the idea to have big wars in the game was there before, but the way we do it here is new and was developed by us because this, I think, goes beyond the possibilities of a normal mod. But there's a couple of other really good and cool things in Albion Prelude, as well as especially in Terran Conflict already, that were taken from mods and that we, I think, make available to more people by putting them into these games.
So looking ahead to X Rebirth, is there a lot of ideas or at least some ideas when you're working on X Rebirth that you looked at a mod or a player contribution and you thought, oh, that's really good. Let's put that into X Rebirth.
Yeah, the policy certainly won't change for X Rebirth, but the problem with X Rebirth and modding is that since it's all new now, and that's really the first time that everything is new for a game, we really redesigned the gameplay, the game design, and the engine all at once. And therefore, it is unfortunately impossible to include modders as early as we do with other games. Now, again, with Albion Prelude, we were working with modders already during the development of the game, but that's unfortunately not possible with Rebirth. But once the game is out, yes, there's certainly a lot that people will be able to do. And yes, we learned a lot from the past games that we want to do better also in that respect. Like there is, for example, this scripting language that we use for scripting missions, which is called MD. This is like a special encapsulated format just to write missions. And this is one of the very few technologies that we try to bring over to the new game as well, where the whole underlying engine and technology is all changing. This MD technology will remain roughly the same. So people who write these kind of missions for the old games can also use at least part of that skill for the X Rebirth game as well.
There was an issue that I had with missiles. And my two complaints was that often when I'd be fighting an enemy, I'd be shooting at him with my guns. And then I'd launch a missile, and then my guns would immediately blow up my missile right in my face. Sometimes I'd be shooting at an enemy and he'd launch a missile and it would blow up immediately because my guns that were shooting the enemy would detonate the missile basically as it was coming out of the launch tube. And sometimes I'd get a mission which would say, you know, go and kill someone. And I'd go and I'd hunt him down and I'd be shooting him. Just when I'm about to kill him, he fires a missile at me and then my guns detonate his missile, and then his missile kills him, and then I fail the mission, and it says, I'm not going to give you a reward for this mission because someone else blew him up. And I felt so frustrated.
Oh, really? This last problem? The last case? No, really. I mean, this may have happened once or twice, but this is a regulatory problem that happens more. I mean, yes, of course you can. This is area damage. What you are describing that if an explosion also destroys objects that are nearby. Of course, if he has a very very powerful missile and it creates a lot of area damage, then the chances of this happening are there. But that this happens so frequently that it regularly you are not getting the reward that you deserve is something I've not heard so often. I mean, it's hard because on the other hand, you can do the opposite. I mean, I've been doing this when I was testing Albion Prelude last week. Like, I go into a war sector, and of course, there's always a lot of fights going on there, and you can make an awful lot of money by, first of all, looting, kind of, you know, collecting the goods that other destroyed ships dropped, and also waiting until, you know, two very powerful opponents almost run out of shield or hull energy, and then you just take them out, the last 1%, and you get all the honor for killing that opponent, where actually somebody else did it. So it's a give and take there.
It's a give and take.
But yes, the missile that detonates after you launch it, that's of course a problem depending on which missile type you are using. There's, for example, that sounds more like a torpedo or something that is very slow, and that of course it's a balancing thing that is deliberately done that way. You wouldn't launch them just like, for example, mosquito missiles, which are very cheap and fast and would be moving in a different way. But a torpedo that is heavy and slow but has a lot of impact has to be fired with more preparation. So
The other problem I had was with the turrets in the game. Your turrets can be set to automatically fire at stuff. That's great. I really like that. I know with Albion Prelude, if you play the Argon campaign very early on, they give you a ship that has turrets, the Centaur.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a random mission to defend a space station, and then all the enemies were coming to attack the space station. All my turrets on my ship automatically started shooting at the enemies, but they would miss the enemies and then hit the space station, and then the space station got angry at me for shooting it, and it declared war on me, even though I was trying to protect it. has there been any thought to sort of either adjusting that aggro against automatic turrets or making automatic turrets a little bit more intelligent about when they shoot at enemies so they don't accidentally hit allies?
No. I mean, actually, there has been a lot of this kind of stuff already happening. But the thing is, you don't want to make them... It's mostly a problem of you moving, of course. I mean, if you are randomly moving the ship around and the turret is shooting and aiming at the same time, then you are, of course, decreasing the chances of your turrets, which are oftentimes at the side of your ship, especially when you roll your ship, then you are drastically changing their location, and it makes it pretty hard for them to fire. That is a problem with such a kind of simulation. We are not faking anything there. These bullets really have to hit the opponent ship, and they have to be... It has to be possible for them to travel from your turret to the enemy. So if you have that problem, it is you can of course influence it greatly by in the way you steer the ship. This was an M6 ship that you were on, and an M6 ship is not as you have to fly it differently from a normal M3, M5, M4. These are the smaller classes in our game, the kind of fighter ships, whereas an M6 is already like a corvette. It's bigger, and that's why it has turrets. And there's the smallest ship that can have a turret is usually M3, which is like a heavy fighter, but it's still very maneuverable. Whereas an M6 becomes slower, and that is for a reason. When you are still trying to rotate it very quickly, the chances that your turret work effectively are decreasing. Yet, of course, if you go a step higher up in the hierarchy towards real capital ships, an M2, for example, which is a destroyer ship, which is, again, like 10 times the size of an M, M6, then this becomes less of a problem because you are not going to rotate this kind of ship very quickly. So the way to control it, it's again about a lot about the freedom to play the game in many different ways. Obviously, what you can also do with the M6 as well as any other ship is you do not have to fly it yourself. You can also let it completely be controlled by AI. In that case, these kind of problems are very unlikely to happen. It's still possible, and I want it to be possible, but it's also not the case that that you will immediately lose reputation just because that happens once or twice. It has to happen quite often. But yes, it can happen. And if it does, well, I think it's necessary. If we would make it completely impossible, then the game would lose something. Yes.
So I have a question about the naming or numbering system for spaceships, because I think the biggest one is the M1, and then the M2, and then it goes to M7. And then M6, and then M8, and then M3, and then the smallest one is M5. Have you ever thought of shifting the numbers a bit so that it's linear from biggest to smallest? So it's easier for new players to say, okay, the 1 is the smallest and the 8 is the biggest.
See, that's a wonderful example for why we have to reinvent the game design. That's one of a classical example of what happens if you build up one game on top of the other, on top of the other, on top of the other. It's really like a tower that gets higher and higher, but you do create problems. I mean, this is really a very minor problem, but the game design issue is a serious problem in many areas where the game was never really designed for controlling so many ships, for example. This is a big issue with the whole user interface. Now we have the user interface with menus and mouse cursors, and you can control ships remotely across sectors, across the whole universe. But all of those features, you have to see, these were not designed initially in X Beyond the Frontier. They were added from episode to episode. That is a big difference to what we are doing in X Rebirth, where everything is really designed as a whole game, as one thing. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, on the one hand, it's great. This process of constantly improving a game is wonderful for a developer on many levels. You always have something to start with. It's not, you know, you can improve it. You can always listen to the feedback you get from fans and therefore make the game better for them, which is great. But on the other hand, that is also far from great for new players, especially somebody who's coming from the outside who doesn't know these things. It's very different. So that is why we are making X Rebirth, and it's not simply X4. That's an important thing.
So I was just curious about the history of the M number naming system. Was that because in X Beyond the Frontier there were fewer ships you could fly, and they fell, for example, only into the 3, 4, 5 category? Is that how that happened?
Basically, yes. I mean, it was originally M1, M2 for the two capital ship classes were always in the game. Okay. And then M3, M4, M5 towards the smallest one. M5 was the smallest one in the original game. So and everything else was added later. Yeah, we had no room anymore to add in the middle sized ships, which were the main classes that were added later, because the biggest gap was between the M3 and the M2, because the M2 was already a destroyer ship and the M3 was still just a small, well, relatively small fighter ship. We're talking like 10, 20 meters. An M2 ship is already several hundred meters. And it turned out that this is an important gap. And so the M6 were added, I think, with X2, the threat. And then lots of other classes came later.
Yeah, you didn't want to add an M2.5.
No, and shifting everything. I know it. You could have done it differently. This is certainly not the best example for why we have to do a redesign. The user interface is a much better example, but it's one of those little things.
Well, the user interface is another one of those things that can make the X games a bit hard to learn. I know it took me a while to kind of get a handle on everything. But, you know, once you know it, you know it.
No, that's exactly the problem. Once you know it, you know it. Yeah, that's great. But that's exactly also the problem. I mean, people, our fans, you know, if we would only be developing the games for our fans, then things would be a lot easier for us. But of course, we want to open it also up for other people. And yet, of course, not destroy anything, you know. I mean, right. We want to really remain true to the spirit of the game, but we also want to make it easier for people to get into. And the user interface is definitely one of those areas where we had problems. And it was never super easy to get into the games.
You were talking about how you could let the AI fly your ship for you. You know, you can build a whole fleet of ships and you can fly just one fighter. You know, you could even take an M5, a very light, small fighter that's not very heavily armed. But you could still go into a big battle because you could take all your other big ships with you and have the fleet be controlled and you could give them orders and stuff. And I always thought that was fascinating. Is that definitely something that you're working on building and expanding with X Rebirth?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially because it doesn't make sense to fly every ship yourself, and especially the larger ones. I've talked about that before. That's actually also one of the things that where we have to have the freedom to remove features. And the ability to sit in a capital ship, especially an M2 or M1, you know, hundreds of meters long ships, and sit in a cockpit and control it with a joystick in the worst case is really not a good idea. It never was a good idea because it's so slowly turning, and also it has to be slow in accelerating and braking as well. Otherwise it would be totally unrealistic. Yet this is just simply boring. But it is so cool to have these ships, and it is so and it is an important part of the game's economy to build them, equip them, and it is just a big part of the game that such a ship just has much, much more firepower than a small and flexible ship. But yet the player, it just makes much more sense for you as a player to remain in a relatively small ship. So yes, that is definitely something we want to do in the future.
One thing that I always thought would be a lot of fun would be if you were captaining as opposed to piloting one of those big capital ships. If you were sort of sitting in the captain's chair and you could see the bridge and you wouldn't have to fly the ship, you would just sort of sit there giving orders. You'd open up all your windows and command all your ships, almost like a real-time strategy game instead of a space flight sim. And then you could go out to your fighter bay and launch it out to a fighter, but just have that sort of very different sense of controlling your fleet from a flagship as opposed to, it's fun to control your fleet from a fighter, but it's hard to control a fleet while you're shooting at something, while you're in a dogfight.
Yeah, that's exactly what we want to do. There will be differences in how you present it. Of course, it's the way you describe it would be really great. It's definitely a compromise between planning a fight before it really happens. If you are at some point in the middle of the fight yourself and you are sitting in your relatively small ship and you have these important missions to take out certain critical targets somewhere, and then you have your capital ship at the same time and you would have to worry about that at the same time, then you have a problem. But that's why we want to have a fight happening in phases where you have the time to prepare the attack first and then basically let it play out later.
And my last question is about multiplayer. Is there ever been plans of adding multiplayer into the X games?
Yes, absolutely. We have. There is a website that proves this. That's onlineuniverse.com. we wanted to make is a bit of an exaggeration, but we were not just thinking about it, but actually really planning an MMO kind of game in the X universe for like 10 years ago already. And this domain is, I think, registered since 2001 or something. At the time, there was this was in the whole new economy bubble, and we had some hope that we could find some investors to help us bring forth such a huge project somewhat earlier. But unfortunately, well, this is of course really expensive and really big to do, and so we went for the small step-by-step thing. Yeah, there's still a lot more that we want to do first, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't want to also work on multiplayer, be it in the form of a MMO or in the form of maybe also as a small step towards an MMO, more simple multiplayer.
Well, the simple multiplayer was done quite effectively, I think, in Freelancer, where you could play you know, even just a few players at a time. And I always thought that would add a lot to the X Games to be able to host your own game and invite just your friends and play together.
Yeah, I wouldn't object to that. It's true, but it has to be done, and it is not something you can do quickly.
So is it not? So it's not a feature planned for Rebirth?
No, not at the moment. But I mean, you have to think also, it is not as simple as a very straightforward capture the flag or something. If we do it, these games are not just about fighting. They are also about fighting, but they are also about other sides. So again, no objection. There's lots of good things we can do multiplayer, but it's not that simple. But it's something we would love to do.
Well, I want to thank you very much, and I would like to wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yeah, thank you. Same to you. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.